NKM proliferation of BPS state with four superchargers. You can see why. Start of title is new moduli dynamics. This is in some relative term. This is about 4 years old moduli dynamics, which means it's pretty old, it's string theory standard. But nevertheless, there's something very interesting that happened around 4 years ago with some of the practitioners of that field sitting right here. But before, you know, instead of going along like that, let me sort of try to give you where we want to go with this. So what is exactly the problem we want to address in this 3-hour lecture? So hopefully there was some elementary lectures last week and previous week about supersymmetric theory, in particular supersymmetric Yang-Mills theory, and in fact N equal to Seibel-Witten theory. And you must have learned something about strong coupling dynamics of N equal to super Yang-Mills theory. And here is prototype of that theory, which is N equal to SU2 pure Yang-Mills. So you all learn what's in there. There is a vector field, since it is gauge theory. And there is a pair of wire spinners. Together, they form a single Dirac spinner. And there is a complex scalar field. All of this in a joint representation of SU2 gauge rule. Now, because you have this adjoint scalar field, this can develop a vacuum expectation value. So if I write in 2x2 form, I can use my gauge rotation to put it in some form like this. And Seibel-Witten theory is about understanding this theory in the low energy limit, essentially as a function of this vacuum expectation value. Okay. So more convenient variable to use, as you must have learned, is trace of pi squared. And the vacuum moduli space of your SU2 Seibel-Witten theory looks sort of like this. You have a complex U-plane here. There are a pair of singularities. And there are something called marginal stability domain one going along like this and connecting the two singularities. And far away at infinity, you have another logarithmic singularity that has something to do with the fact that your vector measure, which would come from this top diagonal part, is relatively light. And the basic object in this theory, apart from this abelian due to this symmetry breaking, abelian component of the gauge field, there are some massive things around. Of course, there is off-diagonal component from your gauge field, which is massive vector measure, which has unit charge with respect to this unbroken one. And as you know very well, that since symmetry breaking pattern is like this, the topology of this generates what's known as magnetic monopoles. So there are another class of heavy object is magnetic monopole. And there are a bunch of possibilities where some number of these and some number of these can bind together, say P of these and Q of these bind together and become electric and magnetically charged object called diodes of charge P and Q. So this special point in the moduli space is understood as a point where, say, 1, 0, that is pure magnetic monopole would become massless, or 1, 1 diode, which is bound state of single monopole and single vector measure become massless. So since these massive things, which was integrated out to give you this low energy description has become massless, you should expect some singularity, and therefore those are the singularity you expect. Now, one of the early questions after, right after this development of CyberWitten, was exactly what is the supersymmetric spectrum of this theory. So we know that there is massive vector measure, which is supersymmetric. We knew that there was monopole-like object, the magnetically charged particle, which is also supersymmetric. And since this, there is this 1-1 dion that has to become massless at this point to explain this singularity, we know that this should exist. But what else? There is potentially this infinite number of possible states that should exist, that might exist as a supersymmetric low energy particle state, but are they really there? Now, a year or two late after this development, there was a class of work by Billard and Ferrari, and they found the following very interesting result. What they said was, inside this so-called marginal stability domain law, there is really nothing else. You have just this or that. Outside, including this asymptotic region, they say, I have 1 and q for all possible integer q, and I have 0 and 1, okay? Which is, of course, the vector measure, the purely electrically charged case. Now, if you look at the mass formula of dion like this, it sort of goes like p squared plus q squared, which is, of course, less than p plus q. So if you have a bunch of monopoles and bunch of vector measures, they want to combine together and form a bound state because this mass is lighter than that. So you might naively expect that all of these dions should exist. But for some mysterious reason, in this n equal to super Yang-Mills theory, almost none of them exist, and only essentially bare minimum of these things actually exist. So this is sort of question we are trying to answer in this talk. Why is it that such a small number of states exist? What is the dynamics that makes them disappear? Now, the way to determine this spectrum is not very simple. The way they determine the spectrum is start with, say, basic things you already know about, and move the theory around the circle many, many times, either this around this singularity or this singularity, and go around and change your theory, okay? And sometimes you hit something called marginal stability domain law, and particle can disappear across that domain law, and people knew about those things. And you ask basically what is the minimal set of consistent particle content that's consistent with your CyberWitten theory. So it's very roundabout, non-direct way of determining. So what I'd like to do today and tomorrow is to tell you about a setup where we can answer these kind of questions in a very direct manner. That is, I pick particular theory with a particular expectation value, say somewhere here. And I sit there, and I just study interaction among these particles. And at the end of the day, I tell you what kind of bound state exists as a BPS supersymmetric state, and what kind of state does not exist. This is a little bit arcane. These days everything is string, so you know people want to study string theory. So I'm a little bit compelled to give you sort of string theory analog of this kind of problem, which is in fact all connected to this sort of Yang-Mills theory problem at the end of the day. So in fact, this morning, Hiroshi gave a very nice review of type 2 theory compactified on Calabi-Yau, and he told you about how gauge theory arises out of that. So let me take advantage of that and give you this example. So type 2B compactify. By the way, can you see my writing back there? Is it big enough? Okay, good. Compactified on some Calabi-Yau threefold, okay? And there is RI field strength five form, which is supposed to be self-dual. And as Hiroshi told you about this morning, in compactification like this, you can decompose in terms of canonical, say, three forms. Say, his notation, let me follow his notation. It's something like this. In such a way that this is Hodge dual to this guy. So these are some three forms in Calabi-Yau homology entry, and another set of three forms in such a way that AIs, if you Hodge dualize, become PIs. So you have this gauge theory at the end of day in 3+1 dimension, and this has, because this is type 2B compactified on Calabi-Yau, n equal 2 supersymmetry from the four-dimensional viewpoint. And this has a bunch of massive charged particles associated with this gauge field. That's very easy to see because this A4, or I should call it C4, RI four-form field, whose exterior derivative gives you a 5, okay? This couples minimally to D3 brain. So if D3 brain wraps on some 3 cycle, which is Poincaré dual to either AI or BI, at the end of the day, what you see is, for example, if it wraps around something that's dual to AI, you will see AI, where D3 brain, which was 3+1 dimensional object, you wrap 3 dimension, so you have only one dimension, which is time direction, in remaining 3+1 dimension. Okay? So this is the one possible way of realizing this Cyber-Witten theory out of this Calabi-Yau compactification of string theory, for example. Now here, again, you face exactly the same kind of question. Now I told you there are 3 cycles dual to these 3 forms, homology entry. And I said I can wrap D3 brains around it, okay? So what's the problem? I can wrap it, it will minimize this area, so there must be charged particle like that. But afraid things are not that simple, because if you study what are the supersymmetric conditions of this D3 brain has to satisfy, it comes with typically 2 kinds of local conditions. So this is known as special Lagrangian condition. So if you see a 3 cycle inside the Calabi-Yau 3 manifold, and if you try to wrap D3 brain around it, the supersymmetric condition for such an object has 2 conditions, basically. One is, if you pull back the Keller form of this Calabi-Yau manifold onto this guy, it has to vanish. Okay? And then another condition is that if you pull back this famous holomorphic 3 form of your Calabi-Yau manifold, or maybe you cannot see this, this has to be equal to volume form of your sigma up to a constant phase. The non-trivial thing here is that this alpha has to be constant over the entire D3 volume, okay? So there is one condition, and this is roughly speaking minimization of area condition. But minimization of area is not sufficient to guarantee supersymmetry. So you might have charged particle which has, all the right property, okay? But its actual mass need not saturate the BPS bound, okay? Supersymmetric bound. And in order to preserve some supersymmetry, for supercharging in this case, you have to be able to say that this is true. Now, this problem is a notoriously difficult problem. And in fact, over the last few years, there are a lot of effort from mathematicians and some famous physicists, like, for example, Michael Douglas, try to answer this question systematically. And some of you may have heard about so-called derived category. Okay? And that's essentially a way, I mean, one effort to try to get at this problem. So what are the supersymmetric, yes? Pardon me? This is three cycle, okay? Three cycle, you pull back three form, and that's volume form, and volume form is three form on three cycle. It's a three-dimensional object, not two-dimensional object. So of course, there is exactly analogous conditions for the, say, two cycles and four cycles. I'm looking at just one side of that story here, just because it has just direct connection. And of course, both side problem is supposed to be very, very difficult to deal with, okay? Now, for example, some of you may heard about this factorization thing in Landau-Ginzburg limit of such a, say, Calabi-Yau compactification or its mirror. And that's all about basically the same problem. Can you classify the supersymmetric state in your theory that preserve four supercharges? Okay. Is there a question? Okay. Now, since I mentioned this problem, I want to give you another very interesting phenomena related to this. And hopefully we will get back to the physics of this tomorrow, probably not today. There is another limit of this, where you start with this sort of setup, Calabi-Yau compactification of type 2 theory, okay? And, but you tune the, say, string coupling in such a way that instead of going to the field theory limit, where you go to Coulomb phase of some Yang-Mills theory, you tune up such that gravitational coupling is not negligible and in fact dominant, okay? In that case, what happens is you have n equal to 2 sugra coupled to a bunch of abelian vector field. Okay, and associate with the moduli field and whatever supersymmetric completion of that. There you again can ask about black holes that are charged with both electric and magnetic charge. And since I have a lot of gauge field, in general, I would have a lot of charges, okay? And in many cases, I mean, this example, this black hole, in fact, extreme black hole, because we are talking about supersymmetric object, is a topic that has been very popular last year or so, and it goes by the name of the attractor flow. So in this class of theory, what happens is the following. You fix, say, asymptotic value of moduli somewhere, okay? So if you really think of this as a Seibel-Witten vacuum moduli space, you start with some asymptotic value of your scalar field, and you try to find a black hole of charge like this, okay? The so-called attractor mechanism tells you that there are some special point which is given by function of this P and Q in such a way no matter where you started writing down this solution, the scalar field always go there, say. So this flow, I mean, if I draw the space-time version of that, there is some horizon. And at horizon, you always have very particular value of the moduli. And if you go out, say, outward from the horizon, say, backward, for example, you either follow this trajectory or this trajectory, depending on where is your asymptotic value. Okay? So this is known as attractor flow. Now, interestingly enough, this is not the most generic thing. This is not the generic thing happen in the supergravity solution when you specify the charge. The generic thing that happen is that this flow become split. So as it comes around trying to find this attractor flow, it all of a sudden find itself splitting into two. So there are two attractor points in such a way that this attractor point is associated with one charge. This is associated with another charge, such that P1, Q1 plus P2, Q2 equals original charge you thought you would have. So what it means is that instead of having one horizon that has this P and Q charge, we have two separate horizon. So it's two separate black hole that carries some fraction of these charges. Okay? So this is known as split attractor flow. And now I can ask the following question. So there is some bifurcation point in this flow of classical solution. What if I start my asymptotic value somewhere here? Okay. In that case, I cannot look at this guy or this guy separately. So what will happen is that if you try to find the solution that starts here and get to this charge, such a solution does not exist simply. Okay. This has something to do again with this marginal stability domain or and absence of certain charged state with four supercharges preserved. Okay. So hopefully at the end of the day tomorrow, I will be making connection with this funny physics, but in some very elementary way, okay? So I don't wanna, you know, go through a lot of details with these string theory examples because there are not really any machinery to deal with it systematically. So, any questions about so far? So what can be done about this? So one thing we know very well is classical physics. So what I'm going to do today and tomorrow is largely classical physics, a little bit of quantum mechanics, and a little bit of supersymmetry. But nevertheless, even though we are going to use this elementary physics, these features, marginal stability, disappearance of certain dionic state, all of this will come out at the end of the day. In the community, there is slight misconception about these phenomena just because all of this was discovered first in the context of strongly coupled Cyber-Witten theory, that these phenomena are strong coupling phenomena. That's not true at all. And in fact, all of these things, I think, can be understood in the weakly coupled Yang-Mills theory viewpoint. Okay. Of course, it doesn't mean that we can get at the spectrum in the strong coupling limit just from using this sort of elementary physics. We will need a little bit more sophisticated version of that. But at least this will provide some sort of boundary condition. Okay, so at least we will get some weak coupling boundary condition about our BPS spectrum in this class of theory. And at the end of the day, hopefully, with enough understanding about the moduli space, actually get at the full spectrum. So I'm going to do a lot of weakly coupled n equal 4 and n equal 2 super Yang-Mills theory. Okay. So, and today I won't be able to go to this phenomena of marginal stability, split attractor flow, and all that, because I need a lot of machinery from the 80s just to, you know, set up our framework. So I will be doing a lot of simple classical physics. But somehow doing this from the viewpoint of deep brain is a little bit, you know, make the life a little bit easier and perhaps a little bit more intuitive. So that's the point where I want to start this. Okay. So let's do n equal 4 super Young theory, say SUN or UN, doesn't really matter. Okay. And we will be mostly concerned about physics in Coulomb phase. That is, adjoint scalar get up there and break the gauge theory to maximal Galtung torus. Okay. And we end up with a bunch of U1s. And if you studied a little bit of string theory, you must know by now that this has very nice representation in terms of D3 break. So as you know, each of the D-brain, the lowest line spectrum of the open string comes with a U1 gauge field and is supermultiplied. And its low energy action is given by so-called Dirac-Bonenfeld action. We have 1 over GS. We have tension of D3-brain. And you have determinant form of the action with induced metric 2 pi alpha prime f mu nu. And of course, this contains the flat part and the part that knows about transverse position of your transverse scalar. That is the position of these guys or fluctuation of these guys. Okay. So if I have say n minus 1, well, n number of these D brains, okay, we know that I can constitute those gauge fields into diagonal part of some n by n matrix. And then what we do is fill in this off-diagonal part by associating them with these open strings that connect between these D brain. So the nearest one, say, this would be, say, W12, let me call it. The next one, W23. And if I have something that connect like this, that will be W313, okay, et cetera. Okay. So we have, I should say, actually UN, because I have central mass U1 as well, this setup. Now, many of you already know that not only we can associate this massive charged particle with this stretched open string, we can also associate the monopole associated with that, this broken theory, with a D string. Okay. I guess it's a little bit trivial if you know about S-duality, but just in case you haven't heard about this, let me just go through very quickly why that is. If you have a D3 brain, and if you have a D-string that attaches itself to it, this is one of the possibilities. Now, the D-string is usually associated with Rongelin's RI flux. Rongelin's RI field is a charged object under some gauge field. And usually cannot just end. It's an infinitely long object, or it should make a loop. But in a situation like this, what happens is that this conserved quantity that goes in there then interacts the open string degrees of freedom there and convert itself into magnetic field. And you can see this from so-called transthyamine thumb in D3 brain action, which goes like all possible RI field sum wedged over 2 pi alpha prime F. Okay, so this is the second term in your Dirac-Bonin-Felt action. And the first term of this, of course, tells you that your D3 brain couples to four-form RI field minimally. The second one tells you that it actually coupled to two-form like this. And you remember the two-form is the one that couples to D string. Okay? So if you actually look at the equation of motion of this guy, this acts like a source that counterbalances this. So as far as the RI field is concerned, all that happened is this conjugate charge converts into something else, but still recognized as a D string charge. Another yet way of looking at this is to realize this D1, D3 system as a soliton of D3, which is to say what really happens to D3 when you put D-string like this is it actually deform itself like this. And the profile of this has very precise form, which is where this distance I call V. Those of you who have studied a little bit of field theory may recognize this as the configurations of the scalar part of monopole solution. Okay? We will come back to this configuration later. But the important thing is that we have several descriptions of monopole in terms of this D3 brain. And two most important is that D3, D1 complex. And you can view alternatively that as a deformation of your D3 brain, which connect the nearby one. So I will go back and forth between this picture and this picture. Okay. Now, once I say these things, there are immediate things we can do with this. Okay. For example, suppose I have U2 theory that's broken down to U1 by the vacuum expectation value. And I should actually mention that this distance L is related to the usual gauge theory vacuum expectation by alpha prime. So of course we always need to take the particular limit of this. So I just said I have monopole represented either by D string or by deformation like that. From the construction, I said if I have a fundamental string stretched like that, it will behave like charged vector measure. Now, earlier I mentioned something about dyons, right? So PQ dyons, what it would be? It would be simply bound state of bunch of D string with bunch of bound string. So, and in fact, we know what this is. This is so-called PQ string in 2-bit theory, which is there because 2-bit theory has SL2Z invariants. Now, this looks all very trivial, okay? However, if we view this slightly different way. There are many interesting things you can do with this. Now I'm looking at, say, three-dimensional sheet that's separated by the remaining six directions. Okay? Instead of viewing this three-dimensional sheet, let me represent the whole thing by a point. Okay, so I started with R 9 plus 1, broken down to R 3 plus 1, occupied my T3 brain, and I have remaining six directions. So my D3 brain is sitting at a point in R6. Maybe I have another D3 brain, so that's the situation I was drawing. Imagine having another D3 brain like this somewhere else, okay? Now here, if I just translate that here, it will be just either D string, fundamental string, or PQ string. Now imagine having D string and trying to attach a little bit different fundamental string like this, okay? Now, as I said before, these magnetic object and electric object tends to attract each other. Okay, I mentioned that in the context of dions and field theory soliton, but this is still true in this string theory setting as well. So what's going to happen generically is that the two things try to bound until the tension of individual components break them apart. Okay? Now here something interesting happened because the middle point here is going to be determined by force of balance. So this has particular tension and particular direction. This has a particular tension and direction. And tension and direction. And this middle point will be determined simply by balance of force and nothing else. What that means is this length does not affect this point as long as you maintain the direction. So here is another example of funny thing happening, say marginal stability type physics. Imagine taking this point toward this point, which means you change the vacuum expectation value of some of your Higgs field in such a way this approaches this point, in such a way that I have exactly like this. Now, do I have a bound state or do I not have a bound state at this point? Furthermore, if I take this further down, this looks like something like this. And by this time, you should be able to recognize that this cannot be possibly supersymmetric configuration. Because, for example, if they are all aligned, okay, the supersymmetry preserved by this guy is completely different from the supersymmetry that's preserved by this guy. Well, one of the key points we are going to study later is how all this brainy sort of interpretation, brainy physics, looks like from the solitonic viewpoint. And the reason that's important is not so much because we understand it better for n equal 4 Yang-Mills theory. All of this is really happening in n equal 2 Yang-Mills theory as well, where we do not have any such brain interpretation, at least not a simple one like this. Very complicated, similar to this Calabi-Yau complication. So by looking at the geometry, you wouldn't be able to tell which state exists and which state do not exist. You need the machinery to decide what to do with that. But because this sort of physics that you can relatively easily understand in n equal 4, you can sort of set up in terms of this low energy effective dynamics, you will be able to do exactly the same thing you can do for n equal 4 with n equal 2 Yang-Mills theory. Okay. So I spent half a lecture basically trying to set up and motivate you. So let me get serious and do some work. Nothing heavy, it's all classical field theory. Is there? So with all of these brain pictures and string pictures in mind, let us go back just classical field theory and try to realize solitons, etc. So this would be introduction to old moduli dynamics. So where does the old moduli dynamic? Here the moduli refers to, say moduli of your classical solitoid. It has nothing to do with vacuum moduli. So like vacuum is, we are going to set some point, some arbitrary point. So how do we do this? So again, we have supersymmetric Yang-Mills theory. We have a bunch of fermions, either one or two, four if it is n equal four. And you have a certain number of adjoint scalar here. Okay? Now, the traditional thing people did in the 80s, 70s and 80s, is, well, you can do Suzy transformation and derive BPS conditional and all that, but there is some easier way to do this, which is just look at the bosonic action. So just take the vector field and take a scalar field, single scalar field. Because of the supersymmetry, action of this is very simple. You have F squared and D mu phi squared. Ordinarily, you would have commutator potential among this adjoint scalar field, but since you have just one scalar field picked out, commutator potential is not important, it's not really there. So this is your action. And of course, you will have to trace it over because this is some gauge theory, non-abelian gauge theory. Sometimes I will miss writing TR. It should be understood. Whatever I do, trace is always there. Now this is Lagrangian. What is the Hamiltonian? Well, Hamiltonian is easy. We know we have electric field contribution. We have magnetic field contribution. We have a kinetic term for the scalar. And then what I would call potential for term of the scalar. It's just time-like derivative and space-like derivative. That's all. Now, if I'm asking about static soliton, what I can do typically is forget about this time-like direction for a while. So time dependence you forget about and have just this. Okay? So-called Bogomolli bound, from where the word BPS came from, involved the following famous trick. To write this square, like this, again, trace assumed. Okay. Since magnetic field has to satisfy the usual Bianchi identity, I can always take this out and make a total derivative. So it can convert the total derivative into asymptotic integral like this. So this is integration over asymptotic two sphere of power R3, our space. And since this is a topological quantity or something that depends on only on boundary, this equal to zero give you the so-called BPS equation. So that's famous BPS equation. And solving this, say for SU2, for example, give you phi equal, say, V over 2, 0 minus V over 2, hyperbolic cotangent, something very concrete. And there is gauge fill also in the so-called unitary gauge. So this is surviving unbroken U1 part with the so-called Dirac potential, vector potential. And there is also massive part excited, details of which I don't really care. Okay. So this is the diagram. This is the quantity I drew earlier when I tried to convince you that you can think of this D string really as deformation of D3 brain. Because, as you know, this diagonal entry of this M by N matrix is supposed to be position of your D3 brain. And what this tells you is far away, my position is V over 2. But as R approaches origin, okay, using the fact that, the usual Taylor expansion, okay, it actually approaches this point. That's the old story. Now, this is, of course, the simplest solution there is. But in fact, there are a lot more variety of solution to this simple field, simple first order equation, this simple BPS equation. And one very powerful way of studying it is in terms of their moduli space. That is to say, if there are, say, n parameter family of such a solution, what you do is try to parameterize those solutions and look at the dynamics of those parameters. There are obvious parameters. For example, I here wrote as if this object is sitting at origin, r equal to 0. But who says r equal to 0 is a special point? It could be anywhere. So there is at least three position moduli, what we call moduli or collective coordinate. One more thing actually happens. Because this is a complex quantity, you can actually put some arbitrary constant phase and still satisfy all of this equation. So given monopole solution, you typically have four moduli. Now, in fact, that should be very easy to see from this picture. What I'm saying is really you have three different directions in this D3 brain in terms of moving the position of this soliton. I said there are one more direction or one more collective coordinate. You might be wondering where it comes from this picture. There's a very simple answer. This is D brain. It's a D1 brain. It means there is a gauge field living on in this D brain as well. And whenever you have extended D brain like this, in particular, direction like this, there is a Wilson line associated with this segment. And that's what you can identify at the end of the day with this phase coordinate. So whenever you see this stick between D3s, pair of D3s, there are always four moduli associated with it. If you have n of them, we have four n of them. And in fact, you can do better than this. If you have this, all of this also come with four collective coordinates of their own. So what we are going to do is just truncate our field theory all the way down to in terms of this 4n coordinate and its super partner. And study nothing else. You just look at the mechanics, quantum mechanics, and eventually supersymmetric quantum mechanics of this. And we will see all of these strange phenomena of the marginal stability domain wall, spread of vector flow, and all that. business? Pardon me? Right. What we are doing is doing the soliton dynamics at a given vacuum. So, of course, we will be able to change the vacuum and according to change the dynamics later. But when you set up the dynamics, we are keeping the asymptotic value of the Higgs field fixed. Okay, so how, I mean, so far what we did is draw this, and I basically told you there are field theory solutions associated with it in any one of such configuration. But this is not enough. We want to understand the interaction, say, between this guy and this guy, and interaction between this guy and this guy. Okay, we need to do dynamics, which means we need to do time dependence. Okay. So what we want to do generically is think of these solutions in terms of a bunch of collective coordinates. So this, of course, will depend on X. And imagine having many, many collective coordinates that tells you where these things are and what are these Wilson lines. Okay? And then consider time dependence in a very restricted manner, where you put the time dependence only in this form. What does this mean? It means that you're not exciting all of the gauge field degrees of freedom, but rather just trying to keep the shape of the solitons intact and move it around slowly, okay? In such a way that the shape of these things does not get deformed too much. So again, there are some manifolds that's defined by these coordinates g mu. So some higher dimensional manifold that exists, 4n dimensional, say. Okay, and instead of solving the full field equation for these solitons, I'm going to just move the soliton very slowly around these things, which happen to capture the interaction between the two very well. So, well, since we need to do dynamics, we need to derive Lagrangian. But this is a Lagrangian for mechanics, not the field theory. Okay, so how do we do this? Now we have the initial Lagrangian like this. Okay? So what we want to do is put this configuration back into this field theory Lagrangian and integrate over all space. So integrate over this X. What that does is get rid of information about the detailed form of these solitons, but leave behind these informations about where these solitons are, how fast they are moving. Okay? And of course, individual of these solitons at any fixed value of moduli would solve my Bogomolnik equation, okay, as before. So what are the terms in my action? If I rewrite this in terms of electric and magnetic field, the electric field minus magnetic field, time derivative piece, and space derivative piece. What we said before is this combined with this can be solved by B equal D phi. And at the end of the day, if you integrate over space, only D mu is the mass of this configuration, which is given by this boundary integral. So this and this does nothing for you in terms of dynamics. All the time dependence will survive through this time. Okay, so let me get rid of this magnetic part. So what kind of electric field and what kind of time dependence will we get if I do this time dependence? That's the question. Well, one of the things that turns out to be very useful is think of this scalar field as if it is one of the gauge fields. So invent a new direction. It's a fictitious direction. It's not real. And call it 4 and call this A4. And does my notation here. And I'm pretending that this is fourth component of some gauge field. So accordingly, whenever I write something like this, this is identically zero operator. It's just mathematical convenience, which makes connection with instanton physics, because the Bogomol equation I wrote in this setting goes in this form, which is familiar instanton equation. But I mean, this is just notation, nothing else. Now, whenever you do gauge theory, one of the most important things you have to keep in mind is so-called gauge constraint. It's one of the equation of motion. It has special meaning. And that goes like, in terms of this language, EM equal to zero. What is EM? This is round zero, AM as usual, and DI is zero. Now so far, I want everything static, so I just ignored all the time component. I said basically things like this identically zero. But because of this Gauss constraint, I cannot do that anymore because time dependence here will propagate down here. So if I take the time derivative of this time dependent configuration, through the chain rule, what happens is I take derivative with respect to my collective coordinate, and my collective coordinate time derivative shows up here, okay? Since this is non-trivial in general, this equation cannot be satisfied without this piece. In fact, the simplest thing you can do is make A0 and let it behave like G dot and some gauge function. So this is element of my gauge algebra, some gauge function, in such a way that the whole thing looks like round G AM minus DN epsilon. Now, this should be plus, I think. The whole thing, in order for this classical dynamics to be consistent, must solve the Gauss constraint. Okay? Now, this is velocity in my moduli space. And that knows nothing about actual space. And these are the guys that knows about actual space. So if I call the whole thing delta AM, it has to satisfy because of this DM delta AM equal to zero. This is the famous background gauge choice. It is a gauge choice, but very natural one from the viewpoint of moduli dynamics. And this we call zero mode because this is what gives us a natural deformation which follows the motion along the moduli space. Okay. So after all of this is used, so let me remind you, this is essentially my electric field, including this time derivative of this phi direction. So I just put that back in here and integrate over the space, then what I will have is dx to the 3 delta mu. So I've been here pretending I have only one g, but of course I have many g's. Okay, so let me use the index mu for this collective coordinate. So that's the collective coordinate index. Km delta mu Am g dot mu g dot mu. And once we integrate over this X3, R3, my space, I will call this G mu. So if I just look at the bosonic part of this story, okay, what we see is, erase this. All the complicated field theoretical stuff completely disappeared, and the Lagrangian that I have is, we typically factor 2 there, just convention, have g mu mu defined that way, like this. This is called nonlinear sigma model. This is a dynamics of particle whose coordinate lives in some manifold and whose metric is given by G mu nu. Okay. And metric, of course, contain all non-trivial field theory information and is computed through these field theoretical quantities, of course. So if one can solve everything, if you can solve the classical dynamics, you would be able to discover this completely by solving these first order differential equations. But of course, that's a very difficult thing to do again. So that's not what we do. So to again make in contact with previous pictures, if I have a certain number of monopoles like this, okay, then I have, say, 6 of those. I have 6 times 4, which is 24-dimensional manifold, which has some smooth metric. And relative interaction between these 6 objects is completely determined by this dynamics, this manifold. So trick is, of course, to how to discover this guy. How do you actually get at this? I mean, this is a horrendous problem. You must have heard of this famous Atiyah-Hitch manifold. The entire book is written about it by those two guys. Happen to be very expensive book. I mean, it's a horrendous subject. It used to be at least a horrendous subject. So today, hopefully, I will get at some example of this and tell you how those particular cases were used, for example, to get at the answer to the question I just stated at the very beginning, say, SU2 gauge group that's broken down to U1, and how those dion spectrum must be like this. For example, I stated the only particles there are which carries monopole charge are those with single monopole charge, and there was no doubly charged monopole or dion that has double magnetic charge. One of the things this will tell you is exactly that, why those things are actually absent. Now, here, among these complicated stuff, among this 4n number of zero mod, or this 4n number of collective coordinate, once in a while you encounter something very special, something almost trivial. Imagine considering a particular case where this is actually zero. Okay? It's as if you're not doing anything. But there is a possibility that something survives in terms of the second part that comes from your time component of the gauge field. It sort of looks like gauge transformation because this gauge function taken, a derivative taken on your gauge function. Okay? But it is not really gauge mode because of this velocity dependence or this time dependence. If this were, I mean, if this G were constant, for example, there would be gauge mode, the pure gauge. But because this is dynamical thing that's multiplied here, it's not really gauge mode. And even without this, that defines a particular direction. And in fact, it has something to do with taking, say, U1 gauge transformation on this set of solution. Okay? And for example, on this solution. So in such a situation, there are special cases where my gauge mode looks like covariant derivative of some gauge function in such a way that epsilon approaches some constant value at infinity. And because this has to satisfy Laplace equation, one of the consequences of this is epsilon goes like constant and times some another constant, say prime, R. This is the usual long-range solution to your Laplace equation, right? Now, what that means in terms of this electric field, I said electric field would be motion in your moduli space times dm of epsilon, di of epsilon, since I'm really looking at electric field. So what this means is I have actually electric charge. You just take derivative of 1 over r, that becomes 1 over r squared, and that's an electric field. It means there is electric charge hidden somewhere. So in fact, this moduli space not only gives you interaction among these objects, but it also has ability to generate electric charge. So just by turning on certain momentum here, you get electric charge. I mean, again, this is all very old stuff. In the late 1970s, all of this is discovered. So by turning on some particular conserved momentum, you have ability to turn on this fundamental string. In fact, because of the consistency of all this, this thing coming from the gauge transformation, charge quantization is also automatic if you do quantized version of this, and you do get exactly right fundamental string. Okay, so, I mean, I'm afraid so far things has been a little bit too abstract, right? I mean, all of these are elementary stuff, but these are something that's taught in usual field theory class these days. I mean, maybe you are taught if you are in Cambridge or something, but otherwise you probably haven't any experience with anything like this. But everything is elementary. It's just boring. That's the problem. So let me give you an example, simple example. What would be the simplest? Simplest would be single monopole. Okay? Single SU2 monopoles. Okay. Again, this has a very simple picture. In n equal 4, although what we are doing equally applies to n equal 2. it has four three positions, say x positions. So I have vector x, three vector x. I said there is one angle associated with the Wilson line along the D1 plane. So I have some angular coordinate. The moduli dynamics, no surprise, is completely flat. Something like this. Depending on precise normalization, let me take it 0 to, say, 2 pi period. And the fact that this is periodic has something to do with the fact it came from the Gauss transformation. So I have moduli dynamics that's completely trivial, half m r dot square. So everything is free. Momentum associated with this guy just tells you how fast this is moving. Momentum associated with this angle is telling you how many electric charges I actually turned on. Okay, and because this is periodic, you have quantized momentum, which is quantized electric charge. Yes? Pardon me? You can do it many ways. You can just say translation invariance. I mean, that's one way, this sort of cheap way. Or you can also do actual computation. Look at the zero mode. It's not that difficult because you have precise form of the metric. And since one monopole cannot interact with itself, it has to be obvious that it has to be flat. Otherwise, a single monopole interacts with itself. That doesn't sound right. Now, of course, the numbers, you have to be careful. With it, why is it 1 over m here, for example? And then you can match with the precise quantization condition of your electric charge. So if I excite, say, q unit of this guy, this would be what I call 1 cation. So these ions are very easy to construct. And that's why they are always there, almost. Now, you might think this is way too trivial. It doesn't, you know, deserve your attention. So let me throw in a little bit of non-trivial physics. I said we are doing supersymmetry Yang-Mills theory. What it means is that you cannot just have bosonic massless mode. If there are supersymmetry that's left unbroken after all, what it means is there should be superpartner to these guys. So precise number of superpartner will depend on what kind of supersymmetric theory you are dealing with. So it shouldn't be a surprise that depending on whether you are doing n equal 4 or n equal 2 Yang-Mills theory, you have different completion or supersymmetric completion of this. If you are doing n equal 4 with larger supersymmetry, what you get is 4, say alpha going to 1 to the 4, complex fermions. If you are doing n equal 4 super Yang-Mills, we have half of that. Then again, you have 4 index 1 through 4. However, these are real instead of being complex. Okay. Now you know how to quantize fermions. It's not even field theory, so you should all know. And if you do usual Dirac bracket or whatever fancy thing, you learn the canonical commutator is this, or and of course for complex one, I need to also tell you that this is zero. So this is a bunch of free bosons and bunch of free fermionic harmonic oscillators. Okay, so So how is the vacuum defined? So let's not do the complicated thing. Let's do simple one. So vacuum you can define by saying it's annihilated by half of the fermion. And you build the state by applying the creation operator. Now, how many of these do we have? We have four of these guys, right? So how many possibilities are there? I can either turn on or off of these four guys, okay? So 2 to the 4, there are 16 of these. Let's look at what those things look like. Now, again, because these things came from spinner, there are a bunch of spinner fields in your N equal 4 Young Mill theory. There are a bunch of spinners. And these are lowest line of those. It means it carries angular momentum, in particular spin. In fact, half of them, say psi 1 dagger, psi 2 dagger, carries up spin half. Psi 3, psi 4 dagger, say carries minus half. Okay, so what are these 16 states look like? Of course, there are states where you do not turn on any of them. Doesn't have any spin. You turn on, say, first one, it has spin half. If you turn on 1 and 2, it has spin 1. And you can go on like this. This also has spin half. Then you can turn on 2 of spin half and 1 minus half, like this. Similarly on the other side, so this is, so SG equal to 0. SG equal to half, it's equal to 1. Here, for example, you can do 1 0 1 0 1 0 0 1 0 1 1 0 0 1 0 1 0 1 1 1 1. And there are 4 like this on this side and 1 like this on this side. So 2 spin 1 and minus 1. 4 of these guys, and 6 of spinistic. And if you ever studied N equal 4 supersymmetry Young Mill theory, you should recognize this immediately as N equal 4 vector multiplier. So doing nothing, we didn't do any dynamic. We just look at the degeneracy of the soliton that comes about just because of supersymmetry, we learn that monopoles are in N equal 4 vector multiplier. This is very fortunate because, since Olive and, Montonen and those guys, people sort of hopingly expected that this maximally supersymmetric Young Mill theory has S duality or electromagnetic duality where role of charged vector meson changes with the role of monopole. And if one does not match with the other in terms of degeneracy, we would be in big trouble and the conjecture would be completely out of the way. Okay? And of course, this was recognized very early on in early 1980s, actually, that this matching is possible only for N equal 4 Young Mill theory and not with N equal 2 Young Mill theory. If I did N equal 2, remember, I have lambda, lambda, delta. It would be four-dimensional Clifford algebra. And the representation you will get at the end of the day has degeneracy of 4 with maximal spin half. That's not a vector multiplier. So N equal 2 Young Mill theory, the reason is much more subtle, even though there are S duality there, is because of this fact. Now, this is also too trivial, so let's do next non-trivial thing. But I should remind you that this part will be always there because there is always translational symmetry that's broken by soliton. So no matter how many monopoles you consider, this structure will be always there. So this part always sort of factors out from the dynamics. So next non-trivial thing would be to take a pair of monopoles and try to study their dynamics. And out of 8 moduli associated with 2 monopoles, there is a 4 direction like this that's going to be trivial. So let's try to study the other 4 direction that knows all thing, everything about the interaction. Now, obvious thing to try would be take pair of SU2 monopoles, right? You think that's the simplest generalization of this. But as I told you, famous people spend a lot of months solving that problem. And it took them a while to find out what the metric is. And that's if I have 2 SU2 monopole, the resulting thing is called RTIH manifold. It's very complicated. Let me not do that. I will do SU3 monopole. So again, let me go back to the picture. I'll do this example. So instead of having 2 identical monopoles, I have a pair which are distinct. They carry different gauge charges. This monopole and this monopole talk to each other through this middle D3 brain. So there are a bunch of massless things here that are being interchanged between the two guys, and therefore they interact with each other. If I would do a pair of SU2 monopole, I would do this, but for a reason I'm going to explain later, it's much more complicated. Now, let me give you the answer first and try to justify the answer. Answer is simply this. So apart from this central mass thing, I said there is always there. So perhaps I should write this position, relative position vector R. The following is the answer, metric of relative motion is this. This exact answer, apart from the fact that I sort of dropped important coupling constant in front of 1 over R. Okay, other than that, it's exact. It looks sort of singular near R equal to 0, right? There are some divergent things here. But actually, this is not singular, because what happens is if you redefine small r like this, what this goes over is completely, at least in the limit where this is much, much smaller than square root of mu. I mean, this is an easy exercise to do. This is fairly well known. What happens is this circle is, because of this term, the so-called Hopf vibration over the 2 sphere here, and together they form a 3 sphere. But this is not really 3 sphere and circle, but it's actually 3 sphere in such a way that you have this sort of behavior near R equal to 0. Far away, of course, I have relative, so this is so-called reduced mass of 2 particle system. So just, you know, reduced mass governing almost free dynamics. And there is this part correspond to, say, I mean, the peep psi, turning on this peep psi correspond to putting, say, relative charge in such a way that this has positive charge and this has negative charge, negative electric charge. Right? Now, so let me try to justify this, and with that, we will close today. Although I wanted to get to any for true example, perhaps tomorrow, we have to wait until tomorrow. So why is it right answer? I mean, it looks too simple. I mean, how could something like this correct with this complicated dynamics? We can trace back what these things, you know, where these things come from, you know, simple classical dynamics stuff in terms of real electrodynamics and nothing else. So instead of using Lagrangian, let us go to a particular charge sector. So let me call this Q. So instead of looking at pure monopole, I'm going to look at these ions of opposite electric charge. If you go that effective Lagrangian in that term, what you have is 1 over R. So V12, so this is R dot square minus Q square. And then Q cosine theta by dot. Something simple like that. So where does it come from? Now, these arise from combination of many things. First of all, let's look at this brain diagram again. Okay. And I'm going to pretend that one of the monopole is a test object. So I will draw like this. But I'm going to use this full solution of the other guy. This is typically thing you do in say, electrostatic problem. You have, you know, charge one, charge two. The way you figure out the, you know, attractive potential between the two is look at the long range field generated by this charge one and put the second one as a test object. That's exactly what you do in undergraduate electrostatic. Now, look at the motion of this. So the Lagrangian of this would be M2, which is something like this expectation value, G2 square, Q2 square, that's the mass of this ion, and then 1 minus V2 square half minus. That's your relativistic Lagrangian. However, if you have this, the other guy nearby, this length is not constant. It's deformed by this guy, right? The way it gets deformed, again, ignoring possible 1 over E square, is just this. If I go near the other guy, it becomes longer, and therefore it becomes more massive. So you have something like this. Now, I'm essentially setting my magnetic charge to 1, just for the sake of convenience. You can restore it everywhere. And then you have similar things really coming from the other guys as well. So then I view this as a background and view this as a test object, and you will have exactly symmetrical thing from the other side. Finally, is G1, Q1 interacting with another thing, that's G2, Q2. Then there are all kinds of long range interactions, right? This is magnetic charge, electric charge, magnetic charge, electric charge. There are Coulomb repulsions, magnetic Coulomb repulsion, magnetic Coulomb repulsion, electric Coulomb repulsion. This has a magnetic charge, so there is a sort of Dirac-like potential generated by this guy, which is seen by this electric charge, and vice versa. So there are four kinds of different interactions going on through the exchange of electrodynamics. Okay? Now, my time is up, so I won't be able to write down every such term, but let me say, at the end of the day, those become if you combine all of those things, This is impossible. So at the end of the day, I have m1, m2, 1 minus half v central mass square, half q central mass square, 1 plus reduced mass r12 v2 minus v1 square, 1, 2, q2 minus q1 square, q2 minus q1, v2 minus v1, and the vector potential due to Dirac monopole. And if I get rid of this q2 minus q1 in favor of its conjugate variable in such a way that I identify its conjugate momentum with q2 minus q1, you get exactly the geometry you got before. But why is it exact? It shouldn't be exact. I mean, all I did was do stupid long range interaction. I mean, after all, this is Yang-Mills theory where there are massive objects that are still there. Why should it be exact? Well, one way to argue is that, you know, this is only possibility. There is a way to argue using symmetry and stuff. There is no other possible metric you can write down consistent with symmetry. But there is a very simple explanation why this is. So let me close with that remark. I said that Atiyah-Hitchin case is much, much more complicated. Okay? Atiyah-Hitchin is sort of similar, far away, when the distance between these two are very far away. But it's different when they are nearby. It does not behave like, I mean, there are exponential correction to these things. One way to understand those exponential correction is this. When these two identical monopoles scatter and do this, there is one possible process that cannot be accounted for by this long range interaction, which is they come in as a pure monopole and go out, but go out as a diode. So you create fundamental string this way and fundamental string that way. Okay, you can generate net electric charge between these two monopoles. They come in as monopole 1 and 1 and go out as diode 1, 1 and 1 minus 1. And that cannot possibly explain by the long range force. But if you think about scattering between this guy and this guy, that's completely impossible because I mean, this and this cancel as a net charge. However, if you try to put fundamental string here, there's no way you can cancel the charge by putting fundamental string there. So even though there are massive things that can be exchanged at short range, if you have this pair of distinct solitons, that process cannot happen, not at least in this low energy limit. And that's why this stupid long range effective Lagrangian happens to be exact in this limit, and therefore you have this analytic form of, you know, interaction Lagrangian. Now, tomorrow, when we try to correct this moduli dynamics in such a way that it knows about marginal stability, domain one, and all these interesting physics, we will have to come back to this single example of pair of distinct monopoles. The manifold is called Taubner manifold, or sometimes it's referred to as the Kalvin-Klein monopole solution. I hope I can get at more interesting physics tomorrow, and thanks for your patience today. Oh my God, what a mess. Thank you. I don't know if I... Sure.